And that's Big Bill Brunswick, whose voice is featured, by the way. I don't know if featured. It is in the film, I understand. But Phil Conant is here. How are you doing, Phil?
Good.
You have not yet seen the film.
I have not yet seen it.
Did you see?
It was at the festival last year. We couldn't get tickets.
What's that? I'm sorry.
It was at the festival last September. We couldn't get tickets. It was sold out. Yeah.
It did not win a prize. I mean, we're talking about the silliness of giving white helmets.
This is the Oscars. But, you know, why would you give it a prize?
The Oscars, my goodness. It's like talking about the United Nations. It's kind of a joke. I don't know. I think we're going to have Norman with us very shortly. Norman did see the film. I Am Not Your Negro. I understand it's based on a book that Baldwin was writing but never finished about the assassination of Medgar Evers and of Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. And, the bluesologist himself is here. Are you there, Norman? Hello?
Yeah, no, I'm not here.
No, you're not here. Well, okay. This is the ghost of Norman Otis Richmond.
Yes, sir. I'm the ghost.
You saw the film. I just played a bit of Bill Brunsey, who I understand Big Bill was in part of the musical background of this. Did you like it? What's your reaction to the film?
Well, I thought it was a brilliant film because it basically dealt with James Baldwin's relationship with Medgar Evers, who was from Jackson, Mississippi, El Hajj Malik El Shabazz, Malcolm X, who everybody knows was from Nebraska, you know, and Dr. King, Martin Luther King, who was from Birmingham. No, Dr. King was from Atlanta, Georgia. Uh-huh. So it talked about his relationship with those people, and it was done by Raoul Peck. Raoul Peck is an interesting gentleman because he was born in Haiti, but he grew up in the Congo. His family moved to the Congo when Patrice Lumumba was in power. And then, you know, when Lumumba was overthrown, he moved to Paris, and then he went to Brooklyn. And the Baldwin family, Baldwin's sister, Gloria, I think she went to Africa with James Baldwin, but they knew about his work. And they, when he contacted them, when he contacted them, they were ready and willing for him. But they had turned Spike Lee down because they didn't want to let Spike handle the material. But they knew who Raoul Peck was because of his track record, and they gave Raoul Peck everything.
Very interesting. There's no escaping the word tension. This idea, when people look back, they see Malcolm with his arm around Martin Luther King and Martin Luther King with his arm around Baldwin, and then they're all with their arms around the Black Panthers. You and I know that was not the case, and what you just told me tells me it's not the case now. These are very distinct voices with very distinct message. By the way, now James Baldwin, you can pick up on that point, but James Baldwin was going to write a book called Remember This House.
Yes.
What was that going to be?
I think he got maybe 20, 30 pages, and he got distracted for some reason, and they gave all of this material to Raoul Peck, and this basically is where this film came from because, you know, he had a relationship with Medgar Evers. He went down south and he met with Medgar first, and Medgar Evers was assassinated Medgar was born in 1925, just like Malcolm was born in 25, but Medgar was the first one to die, and then Baldwin went to Mississippi and ran around with when I say ran around, I mean they actually went out into Mississippi with Medgar Evers. And I think he was very sympathetic to Medgar because Medgar had been in the army. I think Medgar was born in a place called Mound Bayou, which was an all-black town in Mississippi, one of the first all-black towns. It's where Fannie Lou Hamer is buried, and it's also where Sam Cooke's mother was born. And Medgar Evers' people were from Mound Bayou, and Mound Bayou was one of the first, if not the first, all-black town in the United States. It was run by African people. And Baldwin hung out with Medgar Evers, and Medgar Evers was the first one to be assassinated. Mm-hmm. I think he was assassinated in 1963 in Jackson, Mississippi. And then he went to hear Malcolm. Or Malcolm came to hear him. He said Malcolm came to see him, and he said, you know, he's looking out, he's speaking, and Malcolm is in the front row taking pictures of him. And he and Malcolm became...
Malcolm was taking a picture of Baldwin?
Yeah, because, you know, Malcolm was a real... If Malcolm hadn't been living today, Malcolm probably would have been on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all of that.
Of course he would.
Because Malcolm had...
Twitter king. That guy could really do it.
You know, all kind of equipment. He had cameras, when he went to Africa, so on and so forth. So he was in the audience when Baldwin was speaking, and then they met. And they developed a pretty good relationship because this is a famous quote. Malcolm gave this quote when he was talking in Detroit. I guess this was in 1963. He talked about the March on Washington. He says, no, it was a sellout. It was a takeover. When James Baldwin came in from Paris, they wouldn't let him talk because they couldn't make him go by the script. Burt Lancaster read the speech that Baldwin was supposed to make. They wouldn't let Baldwin get up there because they know Baldwin.
Let me stop you. Did you say Burt Lancaster read it?
Huh?
Did you say Burt Lancaster read the speech of James Baldwin?
Burt Lancaster, right.
Why don't we have that on the radio? I want to hear Burt Lancaster projecting James Baldwin, and they wouldn't allow Baldwin to be there at the Washington March?
He was there, but they wouldn't let him speak.
That's because they knew he'd stole the show.
Oh, no, that's what Malcolm said, because they say he's liable to say anything, you know.
Isn't that interesting? We have to have whiteface for a black voice at the Washington Monument. Pardon me, the Washington,
land,
Washington March.
It's no difference. It's still European control over African trade.
Oh, my gosh.
Same old story. You know, you got John, I was reading a review of La La Land by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and he talked about how, you know, European Gosling, the Canadian guy, and the Euro-American woman, they wanted to play straight-ahead jazz, and John Legend, who was an African person, he says, don't be playing that stuff. You know, we don't play some fusion, you know, make some money. So they got the black dude telling people to, you know, water the stuff down, and the Europeans are telling them, we want to hear Thelonious Monk and Max Roach and Charlie Parker and this other guy say, you know, we want to play some fusion, or as some people call it, including myself, play some confusion.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Norman Otis Richmond, bluesologist, broadcaster, author. And Norman, this phrase, I thought it was one of the most brilliant things I ever heard when Baldwin used that line, I am not your Negro. Can you elaborate? And how was that done in the film? What are they doing with that?
Well, African people have been called everything. When African people came from Africa, we were Africans. And, it was depicted. We still have the African Methodist Episcopal Church, and there's still some churches with the term African. Then all of a sudden we became Negroes. Oh, we were the N-word. We were niggers.
Mm-hmm.
Small N, and then we became Negroes with a small N, and we were colored folks. And then,
yes, that was the polite term.
We fought and fought and fought, and then we capitalized the N. We were Negroes with an N, with a capital N. But when this film was, when Baldwin, during that particular point in history, we were called Negroes, capital N Negroes. So that's basically where that is coming from.
But the phrase I remember, and I thought it was brilliant psychology. He said, I'm not your Negro. If you call me a Negro, that must mean you need a Negro, and I'm not a Negro. I'm a man. And
oh, he said I'm he says
that
I'm
knocked
not,
me
I'm
over.
Not your, I'm not your nigger. I'm a,
yeah,
I'm a man.
I,
yeah.
Thank you for you're right. But his point, he said it must mean you need that. Why do you need that? Because I'm obviously not that.
Oh yeah, yeah, oh I mean, yeah. But he was very clear on the fact that he was not owned by Euro-Americans. I mean, he was mm-hmm. he was a very independent thinker. I mean, he I'm a James Baldwin fan, but I was reading his a biography of him, and he said he was kind of not really into the and this is in the early 60s. 62, 63, he wasn't really about crazy about Africa, and then he went to Senegal, and he fell in love. He felt that, you know, he felt at home, but then he went to Guinea, and at that time, Guinea was controlled by Sékou Touré, and Sékou Touré was, I would definitely not say he was in the camp of the Soviet Union or the Chinese, but he was not in the camp of the U.S. imperialism. And James Baldwin talked about how he
differed with him.
He didn't. He differed with Sékou Touré, and I think that's because, you know, he had been politically. I think he had one time he had lined up with the Trotskyites, and mm-hmm. but politically, I don't know. Baldwin seemed to be a bit anarchistic. Because, I mean, like, you couldn't control Baldwin. He definitely had his own mind.
Yeah.
But let me make it clear, he was definitely on the side of the oppressed.
Yeah. This is Norman Otis Richmond. Now, this film should... how good was it? I mean, it's of course, we know it's James Baldwin. But is this... are you surprised they didn't give it an Oscar?
No. No. They gave the Oscar to the... O.J. film, and I understand the O.J. film is pretty good,
uh-huh.
but no, they didn't. I'm not afraid because Raoul Peck is an independent person, mm-hmm. and he basically financed it largely on his own. The O.J. film got some ESPN money, and Eva DuVernay had a great film in there about, I think, the prison system. She probably got a little bit of fun from some folks because she did the Selma film, but Raoul Peck is a little bit too radical. His next film is going to be on Karl Marx, by the way, young Karl Marx.
Wow. Okay, we're lining up. Peck got a call on you. You've given him some 4 or 5 stars here, Norman Otis Richmond. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I'm going to go see that film. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Okay, doke. Bye-bye.
Right. Take care.
I think we have James Baldwin talking, and then we'll come back and have some things to say and be calling Steve Gowans. Let's have the words of James Baldwin.